Welcome to Profiling Criminal Minds. I'm Dan.
Dr. Redmond.
And, I mean, nothing is going to be better than last week. I mean, there's never again going to be an episode as bad as False Flag.
Ah, yes, like it's just... you say that now.
Well, no, there's terrible episodes coming. I'm not saying there's not terrible episodes coming, right? But False Flag, no, not as bad as False Flag.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Such a nightmare. Yeah. All right, but let's get to it. Episode 10. What is our synopsis, please?
Submerged. When a couple living in Ramona, California is killed in their home and the crime is connected to two perplexing robbery homicides, the BAU works with a frustrated sheriff to profile a delusional serial killer with mysterious motives and an equally mysterious past.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm watching this episode, and right off, they're like, from the first episode, I know that this show doesn't think much of local cops, but this is the third time this has happened, right? That someone has been, that has, in this small town, someone has been murdered by having a cinder block tied to their wrists and thrown into a pool in the backyard. So this is the third time this has happened. Also, the guy's wife got shot, but the focus was the guys who got who were drowned. And the cops are the team and the cops are like, "Who? Like, could it be robberies gone wrong?" Say the local cops, and I'm like, "No." No, it couldn't.
Why would you ever think
that? Why could you think that for a moment?
Like, that was my biggest, like, you can't even buy, because even the BAU works on that theory.
That theory for a second. I'm like, spoiler alert, those people didn't have cinder blocks and rope in their houses, and you don't bring cinder blocks and rope to rob a house. So, no, he was just coming there to kill people.
Yes. Amen.
And I love the moment later on where they're like, maybe the robberies really are the focus. No, the murders are the focus. The robberies are just part of the ritual. Because he could rob these people easily without killing them. It would be no difficulty at all. He owns a gun. If he just wanted to come in and point a gun at them and take their trinkets, he could do that. But he has no interest in doing that.
And if he was a real robber, he would wait until they were gone.
Well, yeah, but he wants to be a pirate, and pirates always rob people.
Well,
they don't burgle people.
Yeah, no. But what I mean is if he was just a robber.
Yeah, just a burglar. No, robbery means pointing a gun at somebody and taking stuff. Burglary is taking stuff.
So if he was a burglar.
Burglar, exactly. They're like, is this a burglary gone wrong? No. He brought... He brought a cinder block and rope to three different crime scenes. And then in the fourth scene, he just ties someone to a chair. And I'm like, did he forget the cinder block that time? Or did he?
No. No, he must have used the cinder block and
the third time the chair was, they specifically say the third time the chair was so heavy that he didn't need to bother with the cinder block. He just tied him to the chair and pushed the chair.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So I guess he brought the cinder block with him, saw he didn't need it, and took him when he left. But yeah, the needle through the nose was really hard for me to watch.
Well, in fact, I just closed my eyes I don't need to see any of this a second time.
I know. Like, that was rough to look at.
Half the time when I'm watching these episodes now,
yeah,
for a lot of different reasons, right? But there are parts where I know something and I just close my eyes or whatever.
Yeah.
I just close my eyes. I don't need to watch this. Close my eyes. No, because if there is anything I would say after these three episodes,
yeah,
it's that you guys, you have turned yourself into some kind of torture porn, period.
Oh, it does feel that
That's
way.
That's all it is. You don't care about the story anymore. You think you can get out of the mess you're fucking in. Excuse my language. Because, by this upping the brutality?
Yeah. That is their only move. They just up the brutality every year.
That's your move instead of getting a decent writing room and getting rid of your showrunner and get. I mean, it would have been. I mean, I am assuming that there is no reason why. I mean, you can say that their ratings are dropping, but that lawsuit was coming down, and that was what was writing the.
You have to know that they were worried about that. Yeah.
They had to have been worried about that because we're now talking 2018. So you've got this, all of these people like Breen Fraser and Erica Messer, for example.
They know that this is looming all over their heads the entire time they're working on this season.
Because they know that this is after Me Too. They know what happened to Kevin Spacey at this point and the whole thing. So I'm sure. And that's so their idea is, okay, we'll focus away from
the sexualized stuff and just focus on brutality.
And focus on torture and brutality. Yeah. And that's basically what we've got.
Through these three two of the three episodes.
I'm coming to the conclusion that basically, because there was no sex. Was there any sex last week?
Trying to think. It's weird. No, in my head, the only episode that it exists is... Because the first one was...
Bones, Neon Terror, False Flag. No sex in any of them.
Yeah, that's interesting. Huh. It's like they're... You're right. It's like they're trying to change the tenor of the writing room because they know about this lawsuit. And fascinating. Which is, you know, especially unrealistic because all serial crime is... miswired, perverted sexuality.
Yeah, they seem to have forgotten that. Because their killers still go on sprees. They seem to have forgotten their sexual crimes unit.
Yeah,
like sexual crimes aren't still going on.
I know.
In America at this point.
I know, right? No, it's interesting. But this episode is very... I mean, first off, it's great to see Lou Diamond Phillips.
Oh, that's the only thing about this episode. And I was so, you know, I mean, even, you know, you just go to that poor kid, right?
Mm-hmm.
And part of me is going, well, yeah, but, you know, we've seen him, we've interacted with him, so he won't die.
He'll be fine.
He's not old enough to die.
I know. He's a 12-year-old. He'll be fine. He's a 12-year-old. He had a line. He's going to be okay. It's interesting. when you watch the show, you really do get on this lonely kid's side.
Yeah.
You know, because you know that he has neglectful parents and he's left to just wander around all day. That poor kid. And so he ends up, you know, hanging out with an emotionally stunted murderer. Which, you know, oof. But I totally get why that happens to him. It makes sense. And it is a... It is a warning against, you know, hanging out with weirdos if you're a kid. I know it's hard. It can be hard for kids to judge exactly, you know, what makes an adult a weirdo.
Yeah.
And it would be fun to, I'm sure it's fun for some of them to see an adult who has, you know, such simple, almost like childlike interests. I get that. But oof, that poor kid. No, I actually liked a bunch of their scenes together. I think that's the best part of this episode.
Yeah.
I think I would argue that the guy playing the killer plays it a little too crazy. Like maybe the kid would want to back off because he's old enough to detect that this guy is really very crazy.
Yeah, this is a little weird.
Yeah, it's a little more than just weird what this guy is up to. But still, I mean, I liked the way the that part of the episode was structured. I was on board for this friendship that is gone horribly awry. Because, of course, one of them has to sacrifice the other one to the lake. And my question is, I wish we had gotten more of the guy's backstory.
Yeah.
Right. About the abuse he suffered as a child and whatnot, because the one thing that I find a little peculiar in this episode is from everything we hear about the guy's bio, I don't 100% get why he's murdering people. You know what I'm saying? No, like, you don't hear about a lot of violence in his past. like, that would cause him to want to elaborately murder people.
Yeah, no, it there isn't any, to me, yeah. There's
not a lot of clues about that.
No, it's, excuse me, do you mean that sending this, because he'd already gotten into trouble and the rest of it.
Yeah.
And so you mean sending him off to the state mental institution as a young child is turned him into this potential serial killer?
Yeah.
With this massive delusion. I don't understand how he had this massive delusion.
Yeah. In addition to this childhood trauma, he was also schizophrenic? And that came in later?
Maybe, or maybe he was sexually abused as a child, which would explain a lot of the trouble he got into.
That would, yeah.
Because remember, both these boys had gotten into a lot of trouble earlier on.
Yeah, and especially the kid whose dad was a con man, and he was, again, left completely on his own for all of his childhood.
Because otherwise, why would he do such a stupid thing? Yeah. Why didn't they just take... I mean, that's the only stupid thing in this, because it's a necessity for the plot. It has to be there. But why wouldn't they find another place to put their treasure?
Yeah, it was...
Why do they have to?
They didn't know the town was going to be filled in, right? Like,
yeah, no,
there's
no.
Ample warnings, there's signs, there's...
No, everybody's
klaxons. Everybody has moved out of the area.
Leland's father has moved out of the area, even.
Yeah, and I mean, they do know enough. You're right. It's not like the kids didn't understand what was happening. They were old enough to get it. So you're right. They could have just moved their treasure.
Yeah, why didn't they just move their treasure? That's the one thing that doesn't ring, that is really problematic for me.
Yeah.
With sort of accepting this episode. No, you needed it, yes, for the episode to work, for the craziness to work, but... No, you have to find something else. You have to have their treasure being on a floodplain or something. You don't set it with this creation of this other lake, right?
Yeah, the creation of the lake also killed and buried. Yeah, because it's like, thing is, if they're doing pirates and they're doing buried pirate things, there's any number of buried pirate treasure. There's any number of ways kids playing like that could wind up drowning without getting killed when the lake got filled in.
Yeah, because everybody knew the lake was getting
filled. Yeah, it's not like it was a surprise.
No, there was no surprise. Like, maybe a dam broke.
Yeah, if a dam broke, that would do it.
That would do it. But this was not a dam breaking. This was a dam... Like, if... That's how you correct the episode for me, in terms of that part of the plot, is you just say that this dam broke, right? And
yeah.
So then you have sort of a number of people being killed, but there were like only three people living around there. And so a bunch of people got killed, and one of them was Leland.
Yeah, one of this kid who was, yeah, right, right. That actually would have, I think that would have resonated a little better, because it takes away the aspect of them being, you know, so stupid they got themselves killed. It's just this horrible, tragic thing that happened.
Yeah,
that actually, you're right. I think that would have played a little better.
Yeah, I just think, and that's a little thing that could have been done with no problem.
Oh,
and then you wouldn't have, because the Lou Diamond Phillips thing, you know, like I loved when he was talking and saying, let the dead bury the dead, leave the dead, you know, basically let the dead be buried, remain buried. I mean, it was very nice, but it really didn't fit either.
No.
Like it was just like somebody dropped it in.
Yeah, oh, dropped in this nice interesting scene. Observation into a story that has nothing to do with that.
Okay, if one of the bodies they had found was this woman.
Yeah.
That he had, who was his high school sweetheart, and she had been brought up, and then he became upset. Then I could see why David Rossi would go and say, why you're upset. And then he could have said the same speech, but said, why didn't they just let the dead, you know?
Yeah.
You know,
let the dead lie.
Like, it's really weird. This is like a first draft of something.
Yeah.
Could have worked. You know, and then the only thing you had to add to solve your problem is that it turned out that when he was in the mental institution, he developed schizophrenia. And it was under control because, you know, with the drugs and stuff. And then, of course, he just disappeared.
Stops taking when he gets out, and then boom.
Yeah. And he disappeared. And then his delusion takes the part of the pirates and stuff. Like, this is a first draft that could have been fixed.
Yeah, probably. And I mean, you do also have the problem of, well, the coins are all at the lake and the jewelry's all been thrown into the lake. Obviously, the focus is on the lake. Maybe canvas people who live at the lake, like the weird guy who sleeps in the bait store and is always watching the cops with his binoculars.
Yeah, you mean you've never noticed him?
You've never noticed that guy? Nobody knows the creepy guy who doesn't seem to work and hangs out at the lake and has a jacked up eye that he covers with an eye patch like a pirate?
Like, but there's a bunch of, I mean, there's like this is, as I said, this is almost, I wouldn't even say it's a first draft. It's almost like an outline.
Yeah.
That has been kind of filled in with nobody thinking about how it all works together.
Yeah, no, I mean, the idea that, like, no one knows about the weirdo who lives at the lake. I mean, it's a lake. People go pleasure boating there. You know, like, it's a place for recreation. People would know about the creepy guy at the bait store. He would have been interviewed or canvassed. Like, even if you're just canvassing to see who saw something at the, see if anybody saw anything on the lake last night when this stuff was being dumped, you check the guy who lives in the bait store.
Well, and that's I mean, the whole thing was kind of, again, it's just
not thought out. Yeah.
It's not
thought
through. It's an early draft. As I said, I'm coming to the conclusion.
Yeah, they've got a lot distracting them, and they can't be worried about, like, scripts making sense. They just got to get the episodes out the doors.
Yeah, I think so. I think that that's what's happening, so there's no real control over the script. Plus, they have probably, now that I look... Right? And I'm looking at the ones that are coming up. I'm going,
I feel like we've got this problem over and over again.
I think that, at least at this point, because we've got how many episodes with no sex now? We've got 6 if you go back earlier.
Well, we'll keep an eye on that going forward. I think that's a really good idea.
But anyway.
All right. Next up, we have 1311.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Full tilt boogie. Okay, and I already said, well, why would you use that term? And when we found out why they were using that term, it still didn't make any sense.
Nope.
So, when a Virginian police chief's wife is hospitalized after surviving a brutal home invasion homicide, the BAU...
Well, it wasn't a homicide then,
no,
was it?
No, there was no homicide.
How is it a homicide if she survived? Just say a brutal home invasion.
Yeah. If you wanted to use the word homicide, go attempt it.
Exactly.
But anyway, the BAU coordinates with local authorities to identify her attempted...
Yep.
Attempted killer.
Wow. That is some awkward writing right there.
I mean, I've been pretty much easier on these people. Who
synopsis for a while, but this one's real bad.
This is really bad. No, as I would take this sentence to my students now. What's wrong with this sentence?
Please diagram out everything that's wrong with this terrible sentence.
And you could do it without them ever having to see the episode.
I know. No, you just read that and you'll know.
Yeah.
You'll know right away. All right. Yes.
Wait a minute. I haven't
finished.
Oh, please.
You're still not done.
I'm
wow.
Not finished.
Oh, my God.
Attempted killer only to unearth a series of dark secrets being kept by the inhabitants of a rural town.
All right. So, I'm watching the episode and, how is this the first time in the show's history that Garcia is hesitant to illegally look at someone's medical records? Because they see, so Ben Browder's in the hospital. They see the wife's, he sees that Ben Browder is freaking out about some sort of a test that the wife got, right? And they're like, none of them think that's worth looking into?
Oh, no, and there is a comment. No, there. Yes, that's what I said. Well, why isn't Kirsten? But I think there's a comment at some point about how they can't.
Yeah.
You know, they, and I'm just going, say what?
Since when?
Since when? But you know who wrote this one? Erica Messer and Kirsten Vangness.
Oh.
And I'm going, okay, see, we've got more proof that we don't wanna have these little things to be thrown up. Like I could see, just remember when you were in, when you had that stupid lawsuit, right?
Yes.
Okay, just how freaked out. I mean, you slowly had to come to terms with it because it took like 3.5 years to settle.
That's how lawsuits are. I mean, at a certain point, you almost forget you're being sued and you just go on with your life.
And then something comes up.
Oh, then
right?
Something comes up.
The lawyer's letter comes and says you got to go make a deposition.
And it's a whole big mess. Yeah.
Yeah. Again, right? Or something
and so
else.
Yeah, I can totally relate to their mental state when this was going on.
If you think, yeah. And so, yeah, and that, what we're showing is just how much I would think that affects the show.
Yeah, because it's just weird to see Garcia suddenly not violating people's privacy rights. Like, that's very off-brand for you, Garcia. Like, your whole thing is violating people's right to medical privacy.
Any privacy.
Really,
I
any
mean,
privacy.
She goes and finds she goes
every
and
single
finds
detail
unsealed,
about everyone's bank records, medical records, unsealed child juvenile records.
Yeah,
without a court order, she just does it.
Yeah,
as
Zelda Williams told us in False Flag.
Yep, like she's known, like, and people know about this. That's the crazy part. People know she's doing this, and she gets away with it.
Well,
like
Yeah,
until now.
Well, maybe that's something, right? Yeah. I mean, I'm so sorry we can't do a special criminal. Maybe at the end of this season, we'll do another special Criminal Minds lawsuit version to talk about.
Yeah, if we
how
can get
affected.
More information. Yeah, and how it's affected the show. No, it's an interesting
it's
idea.
Because,
but no, because
anyway,
if you watch this episode, when you watch this episode, it is, I mean, this is a terrible episode of television because it's all, I mean, it's awful. Anyone who watches it can see that. But what blows my mind about this episode is they saw the opioid crisis was happening. They wanted to do an episode about it. And then they realized they had nothing to say. This show has nothing to say about the opioid crisis. There's just like, there is an opioid crisis happening. We are not going to take a side in that. At one point in the episode, they say, these opioids are the worst killer we've ever encountered. I'm like, the opioids aren't the murderers.
No, that's exactly the point.
The drug companies are the murderers. There are criminals who are causing this opioid crisis to happen. And those criminals are the billionaires who run the drug companies.
And they have been sued and they have been found guilty.
Over
and
over and over again.
With different governments to fund opioid addiction issues.
Yep.
Do you not? Like, I'm wondering.
How
because
is the show so blinkered about this is what bugs me. They're like, who can say why this is happening? Well,
Are you out of your friggin' mind?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly
it's happening.
What I said.
It is happening because drug companies bribed doctors to give this stuff out like candy. And guess what?
And told them that there were no side effects to
this fake heroin that they're giving out. They told them it's not addictive and you don't have any side effects. Except it is incredibly addictive and there are lots of side effects. Like, that's what happened. So, America, starting in the 90s, was flooded with this artificial heroin, right? Which is basically all Oxy is. Right? It's heroin addicts, people who can't get OxyContin anymore, because, they get cut off by doctors or whatever, they go and they start taking heroin, because it's, the next best thing to the OxyContin. Yeah. So it's not like there is not some association between, it is an opioid, it is heroin,
yeah,
it's
and they
just
try and
chemically
say,
different.
They just try and say that this just happened because they're on the heroin highway.
I know.
Out of Baltimore. Oh, I mean, I watched this whole thing, right?
Yep.
And I just went, you have avoided every possible issue. And I'm really wondering whether there are any commentaries in season 13,
I would love to hear Erica and Kristen trying to justify this episode.
Well, what happens is because the library, it's very problematic. The library has got this weird now. You can order things and they will bring it to you at the door and everything has to be time stuffed. But I haven't bothered because I've PVR'd everything.
Yeah, of course. You've had the episodes. Yeah.
So I've had the episodes, so I haven't, but I will.
But yeah, maybe consider doing that. See if there's a commentary on there, because I would love to hear from the two of them trying to justify the stuff they do in this episode. Because again, first off, you're blaming the victims of the crisis for a huge amount of this stuff, because what it comes down to is people were told, right? And I mean, people were told that this stuff is harmless. They were told that this stuff is safe, right?
Yeah.
Completely safe to take, that it's better than giving people, you know, the kind of medical opioids they would get in the past. And all it was a lot stronger and a lot more addictive. It's a terrible drug. And so suddenly you've got an entire generation of people who are hooked on this stuff because a drug company wanted to make a giant amount of money.
Yeah. Okay.
And they said, but I was saying, don't just use it for palliative care, which is what it was made for and approved for. Give it for everything. If someone, you know, breaks their arm, get it. If someone just injures themselves, you know, if someone has like chronic neck pain, give them that. Back pain, give it for that. It's terrifying. They gave the stuff out because a drug plan would cover it.
Yeah.
And they could make billions of dollars. And they did. And tens of thousands of people have been killed, and all we're talking about is taking away some of the drug company's money. Nobody's going to jail over this, which is insane, and that's what the episode should frigging acknowledge. You're the cops. You should be talking about the source of the problem, but they act like friggin' opioids are a force of nature. That it's like a hurricane that hit this community. And I'm like, it's not. Someone made a lot of money selling it, killing this community.
And would you please tell me, okay,
yeah,
here. I mean, there's a million different things that I have questions about in this episode.
Okay.
I mean, okay, so would you please tell me this doctor didn't know his wife
was stealing pills?
Was apparently hawking the drug?
Apparently he did not.
Apparently he was a saint. I don't buy that for a single minute.
It seems like a stretch that
she
was managing to steal and sell the drugs without him even noticing.
And then the deputy chief actually calls her because he knows she's doing this, but hasn't done anything about it. Well, yes, it's a good thing you're not chief. And then we find out that the police chief's wife, when she was in Baltimore, got addicted after a second miscarriage. Well, first of all, I don't know. I was going to say, who the hell gives OxyContin after a miscarriage?
But I mean, there's a lot of really bad doctors out there.
Yeah. Okay. Now,
so I don't want to judge that one because there's a lot of bad doctors taking a lot of bribes for Oxy.
Okay. But the thing is, okay, he knows what the problem is and he knows how bad the problem is. So why the hell didn't he force his wife into
rehab?
Rehab.
I agree with that, but I mean, if he's the right kind of, you know, hyper masculine cop jerk, it is entirely believable that he would have thought they could have handled it all themselves.
No, his wife is the one that didn't want to go, is what he says.
That's true, but I'm just saying, it's like, if you're the kind of self-sufficient camping person, you might be willing to accept her statement that she can handle it on his own, and you're like, well, I can supervise her, and I can wean her off so-and-so.
Yeah, but the thing is, she has a problem with alcohol and drugs.
Yes.
But she has, and once she's got a problem, so why is she drinking when she goes out with the girls?
Yeah, she's not great at not being an addict. That's true.
Well, You know, I mean, and what I'm saying is that, and she was taking 50 pills a day?
At some point, yeah.
And I'm going, and this didn't kill her?
No, I mean, that's how high they get. Like, it's pretty terrifying how far people get into these drugs.
Well, no, I'm just going, okay, but then there should be a hell of a lot more deleterious effects
yeah, absolutely.
On her physical being. Now she's down to 10 a day.
Yeah, or 15
and,
a day.
And
or
I'm going, I choke when I take one sort of 400 milligrams of Advil.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, if I get a migraine coming, that's the only thing. But when I get a migraine coming, but my Lord.
The amount of drugs these people take a day, it's actually terrifying. The amount of drugs they're taking in a day. But it's not an unrealistic statement the show makes about the volume of drugs these people take in a day, because it really is a terrifying.
Well, amount. And all I can say is that Josh Stewart handled it a hell of a lot better,
more maturely, in his little back fork
that we've already discussed. So.
Oh yeah, no, people go and listen to our comments on that episode. But what's frustrating about this episode is the villain makes no sense whatsoever.
No, yeah, again,
like no sense at all.
What do you mean? Nothing
the villain does. Okay, so here is what we are expected to believe happened. So this woman is stealing pills from her husband and selling them to people. She is not, I repeat, not selling them to the victim, the woman who she tries to kill, right? But this woman who sells pills on the side, right, who makes a little extra money, even though her husband's got a good job, makes a little extra money selling pills on the side, also has started volunteering for all of the, like, drug addiction helplines.
It's worse than that. She sets
up. Oh, you're right. She sets up. You're right. She sets up drug addiction helplines so that she can be the person they call and find out if someone is going to turn her in. So she's spending just all day on the phone with drug addicts. So then she finds out that someone is not only not going to turn her in, but isn't even one of her clients.
And is the wife.
And is the wife of the chief of police. And she finds out that the chief of police has been giving pills from his prescription, which was completely legally obtained because an actual medical condition he has, right? So she finds out that this woman is getting her husband's pills and she's having trouble dealing with her addiction. And she's like, I should go and murder that woman.
Why?
Well,
no, the BAU tells us she's obviously very paranoid.
But paranoid about what? What is she worried is going to happen?
Hey, but then we have this weird past where she apparently killed her father.
Yes.
But and made her sister take the fall for it.
Yeah.
And now she's going to kill her sister.
Yes. And I guess make her take the fall for killing the deputy. But I'm like, what?
And the deputy chief knows that probably
the doctor's wife is like dealing on the side and has been covering for her.
Yeah.
I guess.
Well, and ran and got away and the younger sister did.
Yeah. Yeah. I know.
You know, you just sort of sit there and go.
He full on knows that she's the one who murdered this, who attempted to murder the chief's wife, and he tries to cover for her. And I'm like, why? Was he in on the drug dealing? Because that's the only reason I could imagine he would cover for an attempted murder. He has no clear connection to this woman. It's not his, like, sister-in-law or something. So why is he covering for this woman unless he's in on the drug dealing? That's what I assumed had happened, but it's not like the episode confirms or denies that. Yeah. They just needed another body.
Yeah, like, it's like the police, like the deputy chief, could have been sort of giving essentially protection.
Yeah, he could have been getting cut in on this drug racket. And then when she went nuts and killed a woman for no reason, he would have to cover it up because he knows that she will roll on him. If he tries to. Actually, it would have been effective if he had gone out there to try to kill her to cover up his part in the drug thing, and she just got the drop on him. That would have been a nice turn, but the show doesn't do anything like that. Or, in fact, even explain... That's all my headcanon.
Yeah.
The show offers no explanation for why he does anything.
Yeah, why he doesn't... You know why he takes... You know, and he's a red herring. I think that's what it... They posited him as a red herring for her death.
Yeah. But
I guess.
Because he was, in fact, there when she got dropped off. Why didn't she turn on the security system?
Because she doesn't remember the code.
But you don't need a code to turn it on. You just press on. You need a code to disarm it.
Well, yes, I know. But if she wanted to go out the next day, she wouldn't remember the code to disarm it.
But the kids are going to be back in the morning. It's an overnight camping trip.
Hey,
also,
hey,
by the
I
way, if you
it,
know if you it. Know that you have trouble remembering codes, you write that down somewhere convenient.
Somewhere.
Everybody does. No, it's ridiculous that the wife of a sheriff has no concern for security whatsoever. Like that's kind of crazy. But yeah, there's no way that's not written down somewhere. But no, but the thing that bothers me the most is it's like, there's no reason for this woman to have killed her. Like, there's just no reason for the whole plot of this episode to have happened. And the episode doesn't justify its own existence in any way, shape, or form. No. It's insane.
It says, in fact, it says all the wrong things about the opioid drug addiction. Like just think about Spencer Reed talking with the daughter.
I know! You, a heroin addict, have this reaction?
Yes, but he doesn't think of himself as a heroin addict.
Of course not, no. Even though heroin is the only thing that has ever given him a moment's peace in his life.
Yeah.
I'm sure he doesn't think of himself as a heroin addict.
No, of course he doesn't. No. Or maybe the show's forgotten by now that he's a heroin addict.
He's a heroin addict. Because it's like, you'd think that Spencer Reed would be the perfect person to say that this can happen to everyone. It's the fault of the corporations that push this on people.
Yeah, he could have just said, don't blame your mother. I know you're angry at your mother. Don't blame your mother because this could happen to anybody.
But instead, his response is, yelling at her probably helped her get off drugs. What?
Say what? No, that's usually what pushes them into more drugs. I mean,
which, by the way, that's why the frigging show Intervention went off the air. And interventions are no longer a popular thing in this kind of community because they found out through research that getting all your loved ones together and having them yell at you about the fact that you're hurting them isn't a great way to get people off drugs. Because guess what? Everybody who was on the show Intervention went back to drugs, all of them.
And they're all, and I mean, because they're already feeling guilty enough about this.
Exactly.
So you
make them in a room and just yelling at them to shame them into going into rehab, that's not going to help.
No, and here's my bottom line. It's what I always, I mean, it's really hard for people who have family members who are drug addicts, etc. And the thing you always have to learn, and people do not want to accept, is that the only thing that is going to cure it is when somebody says, I've hit bottom and I can't do this anymore. Help. And that's it. And somebody, I can remember one, I can't even remember which case it was, that, you know, and, but haven't they already hit bottom? I said, no, obviously not.
No.
But shouldn't this be enough? I said, for you or me, it probably would be enough. Yeah,
but
obviously
for them,
no. And I said, you know, and what I said too, is I said, maybe there will be nothing. I mean, you know, if you have your children taken away from you because they have cocaine and marijuana in their systems and they're like 2.5 years old and there's a baby.
Yeah.
And they've both got cocaine in their systems. Not that it's assumed. It was never assumed that the parents gave the children cocaine, but it was in the air and it was around.
It was all around them. all around the time.
And you're talking about, and the blame is, well, the blame, of course, is on the people that took the children away. No.
Of course.
No. Now, that, and in that case, it did have, in the long run, a happy ending.
Yeah.
Right? But you would have thought, and that wasn't the case I was thinking of, but you would have thought that would have been enough to, you know, but
wake someone up and say, I need help. But no, that's not the way it works. It's different for everybody.
Yeah. And in this case, you know, I mean, everything about this episode is just freaking wrong.
No, it's wrong. It's completely inauthentic. Bizarre. They dodge the issue. Like, the killer's motivation and plot makes zero sense. Like, just try to imagine someone who is so worried that you're going to find out about your opium dealing thing that you literally spend all day counseling people who are trying to get over opium just to make sure they're not going to tell on you.
Okay,
that's insane.
And to put the final kibosh on this.
Yeah.
The Virginia police chief is his wife's dealer. Nobody ever addresses anywhere in this show he's lost his job.
Well, they might cover up for him.
Well, yeah, of course. Yeah, I know.
He is a cop. I agree. They are cops. They're probably going to cover up for him.
Yeah, I know. I know.
Yeah.
But, you know, they don't even address it. They ignore that completely. Not really. You know, when he gives the explanation, you know, and nobody says you shouldn't be doing that.
Yeah.
Or whatever. Yes, I know it's hard. No, they're very understanding. Well, okay.
One thing that really bothered me, though,
it happened to me and I had taken, you know.
What I didn't understand was, I mean, maybe I'm crazy here. The thing that I didn't like understand at all is, what was he like? He acts so surprised and so angry that there a drug test comes back that she's on OxyContin.
Well,
that there's OxyContin system. And I'm like, but why wouldn't there be?
You're giving her
OxyContin. What? So what was that yelling scene about?
Why didn't he just look at the doctor or the nurse or whoever it was that wanted to talk to him and say, oh no, she's back on it again. Right?
Yeah, like,
no, he can't say that because he knows she's got OxyContin in her system.
Yeah.
He's giving her 10 pills a day.
And the thing is, making a fuss about it will only attract more attention.
Yeah,
all you can say is, she must have gotten, you know, she must have gotten into my pills, which I legally have.
Here, guess what? No. Guess what? This is what it was so funny, right?
Please.
Is that because I'd kind of forgotten the episode. I swear everything in season 13. Like, once I start watching, I'm going, oh yeah, okay. But when I was first watching it, and then he goes, she what? And I'm going, oh, so is she pregnant?
That was my first thought too.
Is she pregnant? That was my first thought, right? Yep,
that's what we all first thought when we see that scene. And then we find out it's all about the drugs
that he's giving her. So why is he screaming and hollering?
And you can say, well, maybe he's just putting on a show for the doctor. But it's like, but that's a very stupid show to put on for the doctor.
Yeah.
Because guess what? They're going to run the test again and she's still going to have Oxy in her system. So what are you going to say then? Like, you're going to pretend that you had no idea your wife was a drug addict when there are medical records showing that she left, you know, that she
Baltimore.
Had. Yes, Baltimore because of her drug addiction. You covering it up, like, you can say, oh my god, she's back, and if you want to cover up that you've been giving the drugs to her, you say that I can't believe she's back on the pills. But it's like, you don't draw more attention and accuse them of lying on it, like screwing up a test, because that's just gonna more draw more attention to you. So yeah, that scene makes
weird.
No sense to
as
me
said, the whole
the hero's episode. Actions make no sense, the villain's actions make no sense, and the episode is contemptible for one key reason. It lets the actual criminals off the hook and treats opioids like they're just a, you know, a fact of life. Like they're
as
just
say,
a thing that happens. Yeah, like they treat it like it's a natural disaster that people are trying to recover from, but it's not. People, like, all of this bad stuff is happening to America, because there was money to be made by making this bad stuff happen to America. And by the way, blaming the people who are taking the drugs and buying them illegally is the PR plan of the drug companies that make the drug. All of their internal documents are, we just have to keep yelling personal responsibility, personal responsibility, personal responsibility, and we'll get through this. So when a show like this happens, it is helping the criminals who are killing, what, tens, hundreds of thousands of Americans a year.
Okay, and here's the other
thing. Because set aside overdoses, how many of the suicides we're getting every year are down to people's opioid addictions ruining their lives?
Okay, look, I will tell you that there's, I mean, because we have the problem in Canada as well.
Of course, absolutely.
And there's a number of issues, but I think I talked a lot about that, you know. People avoid seeing it because, as I said, the mayor of our town, all you have to do is see the documentary Steel Town Down.
Yep.
There's the mayor going, but I didn't know. But you have EMTs, of course. What really bothered me initially was, okay, why aren't people carrying Narcan?
Naloxone.
Naloxone?
Yeah. Yeah, the stuff that deals with an
when
overdose.
I just kind of shake my head. I think the EMTs may have had.
They all have it now?
No, but they did even in this episode when they finally got to.
Yeah, when they saved the sister, they are carrying the naloxone. Yeah.
Yeah, the naloxone. Thank you. But I'm just going. Why isn't even, you know, I don't know. It was just something weird at one point. And I'm going, why aren't you guys? It's even our BAU.
Yeah, I know.
You know, walking in, you're working on a case. Yeah. Have it in the car. Send somebody back off to the car for it or whatever.
Yeah, have it in the car. Like, have it as part of a normal first aid kit now.
Yeah.
But then again, in America, you got Republican governors and Republican mayors who are like, no, we shouldn't be wasting on money on naloxone. We should just be letting these drug overdose people die because they're useless eaters.
Here, in the public health system, at least in Ontario, British Columbia, and the rest of it, you can just go and with this COVID-19 addiction, virus problem, you can just go. You could already before that go and get it. And now they just pushed it even more. Get your own naloxone. You get it free.
Oh, of course.
So that you can have it. And you keep being told, do not do these drugs alone. Do not do these drugs
alone. You need to have someone there. Somebody. Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's the explanation. You do your drug thing, and then, so that you've got somebody there with the naloxone to be able to use it.
Just in case.
And then when you're kind of okay, and then they can do their drugs, and you can, and you've got the naloxone to take care of it in case it goes bad, because so much of this stuff now, on the whatever you want to call it, on the non-prescription, the illegal stuff, is becoming cut with things, and oh Lord, it's just.
It's terrifying. And I mean, people always say we're complaining about the way they're handling law enforcement, the way they're telling the story. And I know it can be infuriating when people just complain about this without offering a solution. But I'm just going to tell everyone there is a solution to the drug problem and the crime problem. And it's the same solution. It's what they did in Portugal and it worked like a charm. And the answer is free heroin for everyone. Now, that sounds bad, but literally, if you are an addict in Portugal, you can just go to the government and say, I would like to shoot up some heroin now. And they're like, okay, great. Here's the place where you go to shoot up the heroin that we give you. You're supervised by nurses. And there's all sorts of documentation here so we can help get you into rehab if you decide you don't want to be a heroin addict anymore. But A, it's safe heroin because you're getting it from the government. B, you're not paying any money for it, so you're not committing crimes to deal with get the money for your fix. And C, it's instead of the people giving you the heroin having a financial motive for you to use more heroin, they have a financial motive to have you stop taking heroin.
Eventually,
so that is the three things. So it's the answer is free heroin, but you have to take it at a government facility. Yeah. And the people at the government facility are going to try to convince you to stop taking heroin.
Well, yeah, British Columbia is, as they say, one of the few side benefits of this, like in Vancouver, is that they've basically been doing all of, like, they've already started in a very localized area.
Yes.
And it's expanded because, of course, people
with safe injection sites. And safe injection sites are great because they make the whole thing much healthier. And people, if they have an overdose, there's medical professionals very close by. But the problem with it only doing safe injection sites without doing the free heroin is that, well, then you're still letting criminals into the business.
Well, yes.
Like, but, you're but still...
That's, but yeah. Vancouver is... Yeah, but when you've... But at least... Well, here's the argument, right? When you have, because remember that there was a big thing because Harper and his conservative government wanted to defund all of these things.
Yeah, it was disgusting. Right?
Okay, now, and the problem with all of this is you have so much of the population who doesn't want to accept this or who decides, for whatever reason, I don't even care, right? So you have to find a way to at least get people used to some of
I understand you have to start with the half measure. I get it.
Yeah, it's not like our Liberal government wouldn't like to just, like, Trudeau would just like to...
Oh, yeah, deal with this in a fell swoop. Absolutely.
You know, I mean, there's no question, but, I mean, but just think about the freaking asinine problems just decriminalizing marijuana and making it legal.
I know. It's been insane.
You know,
all of these complainers causing problems. I know. I'm not saying any of this is going to be easy, but I'm just saying if you want to know what the solution is, there is a solution that has been proven to work in multiple countries, and it's just a question of having the political will to do it. So what I'm saying is, if someone tells you that we don't know how to solve this, they're lying to you. We do know how to solve it. People just aren't willing to. And the answer is, you have to stop blaming drug addicts and you have to start helping drug addicts. And this is the key part. You have to stop making it the priority of the government to make sure that drug dealers make a lot of money. Because that's all they're accomplishing right now. All that this has ever done since the war on drugs started in the 1960s is to make sure that illegal drug dealers make a lot of money.
And crime continues, then you have to expand the police force and look at the kind of police force that we have now.
Yep. They invented crimes to justify making a giant, awful police force. Well, it's what I always say about all you ever accomplish with this kind of prohibition is to give criminals money. You don't stop people wanting the thing. You don't stop people getting the thing. You just make it so that all happens in the black market and criminals get huge amounts of money.
So
that's all you've ever done.
Always.
And if you ask me tomorrow, could I make alcohol illegal tomorrow? Would I? Absolutely, I would. All criminology statistics have proven that basically the concept of violent crime is a side effect of the availability of alcohol. Almost every violent crime is committed by a drunk person. Like, almost all assaults are committed by drunk people. It is like in the 80s of how much of that. So if you go, and the crazy part is, when alcohol was marginally harder to get during Prohibition in America, there was actually a precipitous drop in violent crime because people who aren't drunk don't attack people. It's just a simple fact. But the problem is, making alcohol illegal creates a giant market in illegal alcohol that leads to a huge amount of organized crime.
The lessons of the prohibition, and that's but it's the same argument with all these other drugs.
Yep.
Right. It's not the effect of drugs, because cocaine can cause people to do horrendous
crazy
things
stuff
too.
Yeah.
Crazy
same with stuff meth. Too. Yeah.
Heroin, on the other hand, people.
Oh no, that just knocks you out. Absolutely.
Mostly marijuana just knocks people.
Oh yeah.
Kind of.
You just
out,
take
right?
the. Yeah, the heroin. You just take the next couple of hours off. That's all heroin does to you.
Yeah, you know? And you know, if anyway, it's just bizarre. This was a bad episode.
It's a terrible episode, and it's full of terrible messages. So
yes,
let's move on to a silly, stupid episode about a werewolf in Manhattan.
And why the hell they didn't do this on Halloween is beyond me.
How is this not the Halloween episode? Thank you. How?
Anyway, when a New York City jogger is disemboweled and his death is connected to a series of gruesome murder mutilations, the BAU searches for a killer suffering from a bizarre condition. Meanwhile, Alves deals with the fallout of a blind date gone wrong.
All right, so first things first, just something fun I wanted to mention. Especially, this should be the Halloween episode, because everything's frigging green in Central Park. This episode is set in February!
Yeah, and it aired January.
Oh, sorry, it's set in January! There should be a foot of snow on everything! There should be no leaves! What is happening here?
It's really hard to get a snow... It's really expensive to get a snow machine in.
Oh, no, absolutely. They're not in the business of spending money. I mean, I think in the entire history of the show, they rented a snow machine once for, I think, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, but I could be wrong. It was a while ago. I think it might have been Mr. and Mrs. Smith in like season 9, but I could be wrong. I would have to check my records. But it's like, I've seen them do a snow machine like the sum total of once in the entire history of the show, which is why, you know, do this episode in October when it makes sense. Do it in April when it makes sense. Don't do this in January.
No, what we wanted was it was a Halloween episode and it should have been October 31st or close to it.
I mean, I don't know what's going on in I just don't understand what's going on in Matt Gubler's life. That he is not the one directing the werewolf episode.
Of course.
Of any of them on this show, any of the directors who work on this show, the only one who should be directing the Criminal Minds werewolf episode that should be a stylized American Werewolf in London thing about madness and moonlight and throw some music in there. Just like, go nuts with this. Why? And it's such, like, this is an episode about a werewolf murdering people. How is it this flat and lifeless? This should be big and fun and crazy. But it's like, no, like they just do a shot of a person saying, endless shots of a person like, wait, what's that sound? And then they get, I got chased by a wolf. And then you just move on. Like, no, this is your horror movie episode. Go all the way with it. You're hamstringing yourself, and I don't know why. Like, this should be your great, big, fun, crazy Halloween episode. And instead, it's just nothing.
Yeah. It was I am just going because I don't know. Does he ever direct an episode again?
He does. Yeah, he comes back. He does direct another episode. He directed the Slenderman themed episode. Well, the second Slenderman themed episode in season 14. The one about JJ's sister.
Well, I have him doing the Capilanos.
Oh, yeah. No, he also did the Capilanos, which is the clown episode, which again, that's we'll talk about that one when we get there. It's the killer clown episode that is not the killer clown episode we want. And they had already done a killer clown episode. So, it's not as good a killer clown episode as it should be, but we'll talk about the Capilanos when we get there.
Yeah, well, it's Erica Messer wrote that one too.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah,
but yeah, that's like, of all of the episodes that Matt Gubler should have been doing, this is it. This is the one. And it's crazy that he didn't get to direct this episode for whatever reason. Because it's such a flat episode. I mean, remember when Hannibal had a wolf man?
Yeah.
Wasn't that an amazing couple of episodes?
Oh, Lord.
Oh, the Hannibal Wolfman episodes, which is the same thing of a guy putting on an appliance to turn his jaw into a wolf so that he can live out, like, so he can completely become an animal and stop being a human. Yeah. Here it's because this guy, was blamed by his wife for his idiot son getting himself killed.
Yeah.
It's like, why didn't you tackle the gunman? Because he's a gunman?
Yeah. And
Jesus Christ.
And the mother, obviously, and the son did it. The mother is actually truly suffering from her own sense of guilt, and she blames her husband for it.
Yeah. No, she completely externalizes her guilt because it was her freaking out and be like, do something that made the son try to defend his mother by tackling the guy that got him shot. And it's like, no, just like a guy's pointing a gun at you. Give him all your stuff and wish him a good night.
Yeah. Which That's is what the first couple did.
It's what the first couple did that we see. They don't get killed, thankfully.
Yeah. Like, well, exactly it, because it's not the it's because they did just that and they gave everything and nobody none of them tried to stop him.
Yep. So the guy ran off and then he gets mauled by a goon.
Yeah.
By a werewolf. Yeah. But then that guy gets mauled. Yeah. Weird things that I guess they're in a rush. They're not that worried about production, but what really bothered me is they get the call about the jogger getting eaten that night, the same night it happened, which is why they call in Luke from his date, right? But the pictures they have of the dead jogger are from the daytime. Like, they have a picture of him not being lit by, not being lit by, lights from a police evidence setup, but just, daylight. And then we see newspaper photos of the dead body lying there in the daytime. And I'm did they leave him there overnight?
Or was the person who was responsible for that kind of continuity...
people who got fired
or people who were being seriously harassed.
That's what I'm saying. The person whose job that kind of continuity was had been harassed until they quit or got fired. God, would it be insane if the answer to my question, why did the license plates stop being good? Because the person who did the license plate was one of the people who got fired. Yeah. And the next person who got that job didn't even recognize that they were supposed to be constantly making new license plates.
Yeah.
That's a scary idea.
When you finally get that license plate thing up.
Yeah. Right? We can actually look at the date when they stopped. The date when they stopped having the license plates. And maybe we could check the names in the credits against that.
This is some investigative journalism we could do, and then we could actually do a podcast about it.
Oh, something fun to think about.
Tuesdays.
Yeah, one of the Tuesday episodes, obviously. No, and it's interesting because fundamentally, this is not the kind of watching this stuff kind of stuff get overlooked is just frustrating.
Yeah, well, you know, now you know why. It's a bad. Yeah. It's
a bad environment behind the scenes.
Okay, yeah, what is why the stuff gets missed. Hostile work
environment. You know, the very thing that Garcia and Derek were taking part in.
Yeah, creating back a hostile in the Black Queen,
creating a hostile work environment. Yeah, and maybe that's why they stopped doing the license plates too. But so this episode, it is weird, that he kept attacking shady people. Yeah. Like, that's one of the things I found strange. Like, him killing the mugger, that makes perfect sense, mm-hmm. right? Him killing a jogger seems to make less sense to me. Him killing a guy who runs a food truck.
That's never explained. None of that is explained in the episode at all. Yeah. So you can't call him whatever they wanted to call him. God only knows.
Yeah, but it's I would understand him, interpolating along with the lycanthropy stuff, adding in a bit of vigilantism because of how he lost his son. Right? Yeah. I would totally get that. But then they're just saying, he's become a wolf, so he's just killing whoever. Yeah. But then we see him actually kill a mugger.
Yeah, and he puts the coat on the kid.
Yeah, and he puts the coat on the kids, so he's not werewolfed out completely.
No.
Why isn't he just going after people that remind him of what happened to his son? Because he's trying to look out for kids because they remind him of his son. So, I mean, on one side of his psychosis, it's completely rock solid locked on the... I even understand him killing the woman who reminds him of his wife because he blames her, well, for his current condition.
Yeah.
The fact that she massively guilted him and blamed him for the death of their son. That kind of range I get. But him, he should only be killing people who either are shady or in his deranged mental state he assumes to be shady. A tubby guy jogging in an orange safety vest. I can't see how his mind turns that into something threatening.
Yeah, no, I
reminds him. Yeah, that doesn't make sense, right?
No. No, it doesn't. And they never explain it in the episode. They never try to explain it in the episode. They just go, well, yeah, isn't that strange? But why would they have killed that guy?
Why would they have killed the guy who did the
if you're gonna card? Don't ask a question that you
if
can't
you don't have an answer.
If you don't have a friggin' answer, this is a TV show, not real life.
You created this world.
Yeah.
Yeah. In real life, yeah, it's hard to find answers to these questions. But guess what? In real life, people don't react to their son dying by turning into werewolves.
So, give me a break.
All of this, you know, all of this is a make-em-up.
Yeah.
It's like, and yes, in real life, there are, you know, solid answers to this kind of, there are answers to all of this, but it's really hard to get to in real life.
Yeah.
Because, you know, oftentimes murderers do not consent to be extensively psychoanalyzed.
And besides, but this is the BAU and they jump to conclusions all the time that you haven't got a clue where they come from. So here, give me a jump to a conclusion, please.
Exactly.
Or have it be somebody else. Why did you have it be a joggler if you're
a jogger? Yeah.
If you are not going to answer the question, you just have to make it yet another
shady person.
Shady person.
Because they want to make sure the audience sympathizes with the victims and not the killer, so they had to make sure he killed a middle-class white guy.
Well, that's as good an answer as I've heard.
I'd say that I'm being too ridiculous because...
No.
But no, I'm probably not.
Look.
Okay.
I keep saying sometimes it gets kind of worse and worse and I go down and up and the rest of it.
Yeah.
But I have lost my patience with all of this political stuff. And
yeah,
because that's
I get it.
So much of it is like you see it through that lens and then you see this hostile work environment and they're what, trying to get around it or they're trying to please somebody or something. I don't know. All I know is that there's so many things that they do that you say, okay, nobody was thinking about it. And I'm going, no, I no longer buy it. We have had 6 episodes with not one sexual or more than 6 episodes.
Without a sexual component to the crimes, which is just unrealistic.
Which is for this show. Yes.
Yeah. So here's a question and I'm going to put this before we close out, but it's like, a man is walking around Central Park dressed as a werewolf and tearing people's throats out and gutting those people, right? There are like 100,000 cops in New York. Or no, well, not 100,000, but there's tens of thousands of cops in New York. And after a night, after a night of 2 different people in the same night being torn to pieces by a human being inside the park, people are still going to the park the next day. And why aren't the cops frigging flooding the park to find this guy?
Well, I guess what happens and why don't they see him going into the park? Well, here's my explanation. The guy goes into the park like a regular guy, but he's carrying a bag and in his bag is his werewolf costume and his teeth.
Oh, absolutely.
And he changes and then he does his murders and then he changes back.
So do you know how you would catch that guy? You would say you would look for anybody because spoiler alert. Central Park is completely ringed with security cameras.
Yeah.
So you would watch for anyone who went in around dusk or before dusk, didn't come back out, and then came back out after the murders.
I know.
Carrying a bag both ways.
Yes, we could have
it. It seems like this guy would be very easy to find and catch.
The BAU should have, except that that doesn't explain how come his shirt had blood and stuff on it. Anyway, never mind.
Yeah, I know.
I mean.
But there's got to be video. Well, no, but he's gutting people. There has got to be video camera footage of a man covered in blood stumbling out of the park and heading back to his place. There's no way there's not video footage of that. Why was this man hard to catch? And it's not like he was living. I mean, if he was living in the den in the middle of Central Park, it would be one thing, but it's not. Every night after he murders people,
he just
walks back to his flop house and brushes his teeth and cleans off his monster fangs, takes a nap, and then goes back to killing people in the park. Ugh, so frustrating. All right, so yes, I guess what we're trying to say is this wasn't a good episode. And sorry, what was the title again? It was called Bad Moon Rising, right?
No, Bad Moon on the Rise.
Bad Moon on the Rise.
At least they could have gotten somebody singing Bad Moon.
Where's the song, people?
Where's the song, people?
Matt Gubler wouldn't let you do this episode without the song.
I see a bad moon rising.
Oh, Matt Gubler and the werewolf would have been played by a famous actor.
Yes.
I'm just saying, you know, like if Matt Gubler, now we're just fantasizing about Matt Gubler's version of this episode.
Yes, we would have had Bad Moon Rising by Creedence.
Yeah, it would have been bad Bad Moon Rising and a famous genre
Clearwater
actor.
Cover band.
Yeah. By a Creedence cover band. And a famous actor would have played the werewolf.
Oh,
you know?
Oh well, we couldn't bring him back because he is on another episode. We could bring it. No, have we never had, Rachel's favorite guy?
Which one?
Yeah, I know. I don't know what I'm not talking about. He was on, he was also on Firefly.
This is really embarrassing that I'm not getting this.
Who was the husband on Firefly?
Husband? You mean Zoe's husband?
Yeah.
Alan Tudyk.
That's it, Alan Tudyk.
Why yeah, you could have got Alan Tudyk in there.
Thank you. To be that's the guy. It. Like we could do this whole episode for.
Yeah, no, we could have Alan Tudyk playing the werewolf. Yeah. That would have been fantastic.
Would that have been wonderful?
Yeah. No, I mean he's exactly right for the part of this guy who you know has been, who is you know worried about his own manliness and now becomes a werewolf to try and justify. Yeah, like that would have worked.
His wife. Yeah, Alan Tudyk
to get back
would've
his
been
wife.
Wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and as I said, in Bad Moon Rising, Clarence.
I don't, yeah, it's like, that's the, God, now I'm fantasizing about how much fun the Matt Gubler version of this episode would have been. Yeah, that would have been nice. All right, so.
Okay.
That's it for this week's episodes. What are we watching next week? What's the homework? What is 13 through 15?
Well, the next one is also Non-Sexual Cure.
Okay. Well, no, there is an aspect of that one. But anyway, After Cure.
Well, there, yeah, but still.
We'll talk about it, yeah.
And then we have Miasma.
Miasma is the one about the, that's the one about the Plague Doctor. Oh. And Annihilator, which is once again, people not understanding the concept of what a family annihilator is.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, and this is, by the way, God, we're starting the arc of them at there actually being oversight for the team and everyone being disgusted with the fact that there's oversight for the team.
Should have happened. But there should have been oversight on the set.
A
long time.
Damn. But yeah, when you get to these scenes, and I mean, I don't know if you noticed it the first time when you watched, but when you get to the scenes, and I want you to think about this as you're watching the scenes this time. All the times that JJ and Emily are dealing with the boss, I want you to think about how much more sense these scenes would have made if Emily had shot the guy.
Yeah.
In false flag. So every minute of those scenes, I want you to think, how is this exact scene with almost this exact same dialogue? How would this be playing if Emily had shot the guy in false flag? And you will see that the whole season makes 50 times more sense than it does as we're watching it. And that is definitely what they had planned when they outlined the whole season.
Okay.
So I just watch these scenes, and every time there's a scene talking about consequences, just lock in your head, Emily shot the guy in False Flag. And suddenly you'll be like, oh, wow, okay, I get it. Yeah. But the season makes no sense unless they fix False Flag. But anyway, you know what? We'll have time to talk about that next week. For now, I'd like to say that if you have any questions for us, if you have any comments, if you would like to recommend any profiling-related fiction for us, please feel free to drop us a line at profilingcriminalminds@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. We will see you back here next week for those episodes. If you're listening on a podcast, on using podcast software, some sort of iTunes, a podcatcher, whatever it is, be sure to rate and review the show, because that is how people find it. We'll see you back here next week. But until then, thanks for listening, and au revoir.
Good night.
Profiling Criminal Minds is a member of the Kinks Podcasting Network.